In through the morning, perhaps turning a little bit brighter and drier across western counties late in the day, temperatures 18 degrees. And finally in Scotland, expect a lot of cloud, low cloud at that, with fog patches around the east coast through much of the day. Some outbreaks of light rain or drizzle expected on and off as well come the afternoon. Temperatures around 20 degrees. That's the latest weather. Arlene.
Thanks, Chris. And now on Radio 4, Nigel Anthony continues his reading of Operation Massacre. It's summer 1956. A group of men has been arrested late one evening from an apartment building in a suburb of Buenos Aires, and most of them have no idea why. Now the police truck in which they've been driven away has stopped, and some of them have been ordered to get out.
Mr. Horacio is the first to step out of the truck. Rodriguez, Junta, Brion, Liveraga, Gavino and Carranza follow, each guarded by an officer. They're on a deserted road. On one side there's a row of eucalyptus trees that cut tall and bleak against the starry sky. On the other, a wide wasteland extends, the sinister garbage heap of José León Suárez. The guards push the prisoners along the edge of the wasteland with the barrels of their rifles. The van turns onto a side street and shines its headlights on their backs. The moment has come.
What are you going to do with us?
One of them asks.
Keep walking. We're innocent.
Don't be afraid. We're not going to do anything to you. The prisoners seem to be floating in a glowing pool of light as the guards steer them like a terrified herd towards the garbage dump. Then Chief Inspector Moreno steps out, gun in hand.
Let's make a run for it, Carranza, Gavino says. I think they're going to kill us.
Carranza knows it's true, but the slightest hope that he's mistaken keeps him walking.
If we run, they'll shoot for sure.
Liveraga is stealthily making his way over to the left, step by step. Suddenly, like a miracle, he's outside the range of the headlights. Dressed in black, he's almost invisible in the dark. Brion's cardigan shines in the light, an almost incandescent white. In the truck, Troxler is sitting with his hands on his knees, his body leaning forwards. He watches the two guards out of the corner of his eye.
He's going to jump.
Benavides is facing him.
Carlitos Lizaso, bewildered, can only whisper, "They're going to kill us like this."
Liveraga has spotted a ditch and is moving towards it. Mr. Horacio is also making his way ever so slightly in the opposite direction.
Halt! A voice commands. Forward! Line up side by side!
Carranza turns around and drops to his knees before the firing squad, weeping. In the truck, Troxler has pulled the bow and arrow of his body taut. His jaw is almost touching his knees.
Now!
He howls and hurls himself at the two guards. Benavides is up and grabs Lizaso by the hand.
Let's go, Carlitos!
Troxler brings the heads of the two guards together and throws each one in a different direction, like dolls. He leaps up and is swallowed by the night. A third guard aims his rifle from the front of the vehicle. A shot is heard. The NCO lets out a cry and sits back down, just as he was. Only dead.
Junta doesn't wait any longer. He runs. Gavino does the same. The herd begins to separate. Shoot them! Screams Moreno.
Liveraga throws himself headfirst to the ground. Further ahead, Mr. Horacio does the same. Shots thunder in the night.
Junta feels a bullet whiz by his ear. He hears a commotion behind him, a low moaning and the thump of a body falling.
It's probably Garibotti. Instinct tells him to drop to the ground and not move. Carranza is still on his knees. They put a rifle to his neck and fire. Brion has little chance of escaping with that white cardigan. We don't even know if he tries.
Rodriguez tries to get up as he hears the guards running towards him, but he's tired himself out in the first 30 metres of his escape, and the second round of shots takes him out.
Mr. Horacio rolls over twice and freezes, playing dead. He hears the bullets destined for Rodriguez whistle overhead. One cuts close to his face and covers him in dirt. Another rips through his trousers without wounding him.
Junta stays glued to the ground for about 30 seconds, then leaps up like a hare and starts to zigzag.
When he senses the shots coming, he throws himself back on the ground.
but by now he's nearly safe. When he repeats his manoeuvre, they won't even see him. Mr. Horacio isn't moving. Face to the ground, he's heard everything, the shots, the screams. His body is saturated with fear. Don't move. All the wisdom he's accumulated can be condensed into these two words. How long has he been this way, playing dead? He doesn't know any more. He only remembers hearing the bells of a nearby chapel ringing. Ringing out endlessly all around him are the echoes of the horrific carnage. At last, silence. Then the roar of an engine. The truck starts up, stops. A gunshot. Silence once more. The engine starts humming again in an intricate nightmare of stops and starts. In a moment of clarity, Mr. Horacio understands the coup de grace. They're going from one body to the next, killing off those who show any signs of life. And now, it's his turn. The van comes closer. They're shining a light on him, aiming at him. He can't see them, but he knows. They're waiting for some sign of movement. Maybe not even that. Maybe they'll shoot him regardless. Maybe they'll figure out what's already obvious, that he isn't even wounded. Part of his body, his knees, the tips of his feet, would like to make a crazed run for it. The other part, his head, keeps telling him, don't move, don't breathe. In the semicircle of rifles that surround him, no one says a word. But no one shoots. When he hears the engine again, when the light disappears, when he knows they're moving away, Mr. Horacio starts to breathe, slowly, slowly, as though he were learning to do it for the first time. Closer to the road, Livaraga has also stayed still, but unfortunately for him, he's lying with his face up to the sky. The headlights veer towards him. He closes his eyes. An orange light suddenly penetrates his eye sockets. An unstoppable reflex makes him blink. The command strikes like lightning.
Get that one! He's still breathing!
He hears three explosions go off at point-blank range. With the first, a spurt of dust shoots by his head. Another catches his arm. Next, he feels a searing pain on his face. The guards don't bend down to check if he's dead. They see the blood and walk away. Operation Massacre has ended. The fugitives disperse into the field of night. Gavino jumps over puddles and ditches, gets to a dirt road, stumbles onto a railroad track, follows it to a station. He's the first to seek asylum in a Latin American embassy. For him, the terrible affair has ended. Not so for Yunta. By now, nearly the entire neighbourhood has been awoken by the shooting. The petrified fugitive has no sooner stepped into the front garden of a house when a window opens and a woman appears shouting, "Don't even dare!" before turning to the man of the house. "Take him out! He got away!" Yunta doesn't wait to hear any more. The world seems to have gone mad tonight. Everyone wants to kill him. He resumes his desperate sprint and, like Gavino, makes it to the station and goes to the window to ask for a ticket. "Where to?" asks the clerk. Yunta looks at him amazed. He hasn't the slightest idea. He doesn't even know where he is. Troxler has hidden in a ditch. He sees the police cars drive away. Then he goes back. He calls out stealthily to Benavides. He gets to the bodies and starts turning them over one by one. Carranza, Garibotti, Rodriguez. Pain grips him when he sees Carlitos Lizaso. He has four holes in his chest and one in his cheek. But he doesn't find Benavides, and he probably doesn't see Mr. Horacio, who continues to play dead. Realizing there's nothing more to do, Troxler starts walking in the direction of José Leon Suarez. He's almost at the station when he sees Livaraga coming stumbling towards him, covered in blood. At the same moment, an officer from the nearby police station is making his way towards the wounded man, shouting, "What's going on?"
They executed. They fired at us.
The coup de grace had missed his vital organs. Though he was in a great deal of pain, he'd managed to make his way through the garbage dump and across open fields back to the main road. When he stumbled into the police officer, he wasn't even asked why he was wounded. The man just hurried him onto a jeep and set out in a mad race to the nearest hospital. At the San Martin Polyclinic, despite his wounds, Livaraga doesn't lose consciousness. For hours, doctors and nurses hear him repeat his story. One of the nurses secretly calls his father. Another hides his sweater with the bullet hole in its sleeve. Livaraga's father arrives, accompanied by two cousins and a brother-in-law. They sign a statement in the clinic's register, declaring that they've seen him alive. A good precaution, because later, a corporal from the local police department comes to keep watch. Finding himself faced with Livaraga, he stares in disbelief. The corporal looks familiar to Livaraga. Could he have been the man in charge of the firing squad? The corporal tells the nurses, "They're coming to take this one in again. Don't tell him, poor guy." The nurses do tell him. The corporal asks for Livaraga's clothes. They don't give them to him. He gets angry and pointedly asks for the receipt issued by the police department for Livaraga's belongings at the time of his arrest. No one knows anything. No one. Except for Livaraga's father, who upon returning to his house that night, mysteriously finds it in the pocket of his overcoat. He holds onto it until 6 months later, when it becomes vital evidence in court. Mr. Horacio doesn't know how long he played dead before getting up. But it was light, and he was numb with cold. Leaving the wasteland behind, he walked towards town, walked into a bar, and ordered a coffee. Slowly he felt his soul returning to his body. As the sun came up over the dreadful scene of the execution, the first to see the corpses were unsuspecting townspeople on their way to work. Word spread, and a horrified, sullen crowd congregated around the atrocious sight. Chief Inspector Moreno was an exhausted and bewildered man when at 6 o'clock in the morning of June the 10th, he informed La Plata Police Headquarters by radio that the order for execution had been carried out. Would he mention that more than half the prisoners had escaped? He opted to keep quiet. They asked for a list of the executed men. Now, Moreno really had no choice but to send the list of 5.
"And the others?"
bellowed Chief of Police.
"They escaped."
The newspapers published a communique from the government with the official list of men executed in the region of San Martin. Benavides must have been extremely surprised to see himself on the list. But then you just have to read the list to understand that the government didn't have the slightest idea who its victims were. They claimed Benavides was dead, but Brion, who had been killed, wasn't mentioned at all. They called Lisasso Crisasso, and Garibotti, Garibotto. It's hard to believe they could make so many mistakes in a list of barely 5 names. Names of people officially executed by the government.
Nigel Anthony has been reading Operation Massacre by Rodolfo Walsh. The programme was abridged and produced by Jane Marshall Productions for BBC Radio 4. This is BBC Radio 4, and now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Friday the 23rd of August. There are warnings of gales in Rockall, Bailey, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Atlantic low, moving steadily north, expected Southern Iceland 984 by 1800 Friday. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking at north at Zira, south at Zira. Northeast 40s, easterly or southeasterly 3 or 4, increasing 5 or 6, fair, moderate or good. Southwest 40s, Cromarty, 4th, Tyne, West Dogger. Southeasterly 4 or 5, increasing 6 at times, fog patches, thundery rain later, moderate, occasionally very poor. East Dogger, Fisher, German Bight. Easterly or southeasterly 4 or 5, increasing 6 at times.